Godspeed Institute with Carol Hollenbeck, Sundays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Godspeed Institute, an enlightening and positive forum exploring the world's religions and spiritual belief systems as an on-air classroom. In an effort to help people better understand each other, promote tolerance, and foster peace. I'm your host, Care Hollenbeck. On August 18, 2000, at 9 a.m., Jean Béliveau left Montreal, Canada. His goal was to walk around the planet to promote peace and nonviolence for the profit of the children of the world. He traveled alone with a three-wheeled stroller that held his food, some clothing, a first aid kit, a small tent, and a sleeping bag. He walked across the continents from North America to South America, then across to South Africa, up to Europe, then the Middle East, South and Eastern Asia, Australia, New Zealand, and finally back to Canada. Known as the Walker, he returned home on October 16, 2011. After meeting 1,600 families around the world and walking more than 75,000 kilometers, his journey was made in support of the United Nations International Decade for a Culture of Peace and Nonviolence for the Children of the World. Monsieur Béliveau, bienvenue, and thank you so much for being on the program today.
It's a great pleasure, Caria, to be with you.
Bonjour from Bonjour. Quebec.
And it is an honor to have you with us and to share this amazing journey you have been on. Why don't we start perhaps at the beginning? What inspired you in the first place to go on this journey in 2000?
Oh, this is, I can go back in about November 99. Where I was running just for my health, and then suddenly over, we have here in Montreal the big bridge, Jacques Cartier Bridge, suddenly came in my mind, in how many days I can join New York running like that, and why not Mexico, why not the rest of the world? So I immediately returned back home, and then I made a way on a world map on tracing paper, some different ways. Then after I choose the one crossing the five big continents, it theoretically gave me, after I've made the kilometers, it gave me about a decade to go. It was just a crazy dream, even not for necessarily me at the first. It was just to imagine how long a human being can do this. And so suddenly I had a sort of plan. Front of me, a plan of life for the next decade, and said, I go, I will go. I felt the force. If we go back before, here we had an ice storm in Quebec in, I think, winter 97. Then I had a little factory. It came down. It affected that little factory. But I think the bigger tragedy for that factory was myself. I said, it's enough. I gave up. I'm tired. We call that period, I guess, midlife crisis. Mm. Maybe yourself, you are too young.
Thanks for
to know about that sort of thing. So.
Yes. Yeah, I had a crisis and started this radio show.
Okay, be careful. You may go around the world.
Yeah, go ahead. Joe.
And then anyway, so I came like depressive, and I was like depressed a little. Then I was not happy. I worked for other companies, and I was not really on the good way or mood, I don't know, in my mind.
Well, that
and
was
then,
a great loss.
So, I'm sorry?
That was a great loss. I mean, there was a grieving that happened there.
Yeah, like. Sort of whole. I don't know.
Yeah.
So finally, and my family was all good. My wife, I've got two children from previous marriage. And then they were, when I started, my son was 20 years old. My daughter, she was 18. Mm. Anyway, so I began a training, as I told you, and to raise my mental health and physical health, and And after a year or two, that idea came, to go.
Wow.
Of training,
Now, had you done previous walks? Is this, was walking something that was already a part of your life, and then you just got inspired?
In my past life, and when I was a teen, and then further until about 30 years old, I enjoy very much cross-country ski.
Oh, yeah.
So we had the training in the summer, and it's a sort of individual sport, not team. So for me, I like that sort of thing. So I left for the work. I left all these physical activities for work. And so finally, after I began again to, because I said maybe that social stress we have, my heart will explode and I will die, like we hear about people, they have a heart attack at 40, 50 years old.
Right.
So,
Now, I also wanted to ask you about the decade, the United Nations decade, and how this also helped to inspire you as a purpose of your walk.
Mm. Okay. I kept, after I said I go, in my mind, I kept the idea secret from my family about 8 months. So I didn't tell my wife, my children, and people around me.
Hmm.
Because I was afraid that it was too fragile first, and I was afraid that people, they love you, they may break your dream because you have a dream and you are afraid it's too very special. So I decreed a date to go. It was the 18th of August 2000. This was my birth date at 45. I was 45 years old that time. 3 weeks and a half before to go, I was so nervous. I remember just putting the breakfast on the table a Sunday morning. Then I didn't sleep well that night, and so I said suddenly to my wife, I said, listen, I'm going for a long, that time my dream was running, run around the world. And then and she said, are you serious? I said, yes, I should go. It's something that I have to go. Then finally she said, will you come back at home sometime? I said, no, after all, I want to start from home and be back home, like we walk in the park in the evening to go back home.
Mm.
And then she said, is it finished between us? I said, no, I love you. It's not for other purpose. And finally, I said, I would like that you stay in the relation. And she, I took a big risk. She could say, go on your way. It's too big. I cannot go on sort of big project like that.
Yeah.
Finally, she took a big risk saying, go. I will support you as I can.
Mm.
Then, finally, I remember in home and after maybe 30 minutes, 1 hour, it's not easy to get a good time. She said suddenly, do this for peace. Join a soul on your walk. And to make it short, we saw further that we were inside of United Nations decade for peace for children.
Mm.
Really, it was not for peace for myself. It was just sort of, I go, I should escape. And then, but really, it gave a soul on that walk. It gave evolution of thinking, and slowly it came much more like deep in my heart, step by step.
Thank you so much for that answer. Now, I don't know how you prepare for, just walking out, for 10 years. You have just a few things you gathered. It sounded like you traveled very lightly. Were you planning to just sort of, make it up as you go, basically?
Yeah, I can say I was not really prepared. I bought a buggy, like a three-wheel
little stroller
to put my thing inside the day before. Just put some knife and fork inside and things from home. I didn't go to the outdoor shop to get all the small gadget, the last gadget we have for whatever adventure. So I just put my sleeping bag, a tent inside, things, and so I just, but I was really decided. And slowly, you make your way. And people, you feel what you want on the way slowly. You make your way walking. Mm-hmm. And so, I was in, after maybe a month or two, I even didn't have like a repair kit for the tires. And just I met a guy in Richmond somewhere in America, then which state? Maybe Virginia. Or
yeah.
Anyway, so and he said he gave me a repair kit with patches. I think some days after I punched it, I had the punch. Anyway, so so people they just say. Sometimes they say, you want something, you need anything, and because I left very vulnerable, it's a very vulnerable concept, huh? Mm. Just walk and many things can happen on the way, and about danger, or even you meet people very generous as well, so it's sort of extreme, is it?
Yes, and I can see where it you know, on the one hand, it may have come from a need to search for something, but on the other hand, it also takes a tremendous amount of trust, to do this kind of extensive project that goes on for years like this. Now, the following, you left on your birthday when you were 45. The following September would bring the news of 9/11 to you. And in the States especially, all recall where we were that day. Where were you in the world, and did you hear of it?
Yeah, that 9/11, I was in Costa Rica. And a year before, in 2000, I was in New York. A year before, it's very special because it took 1 year from New York to Costa Rica, finally, and I was in the fire station. I was just in staying there because sometime in Latin America or even a little bit everywhere, I ask fire station, I sleep a little bit everywhere. So, and in morning, we were looking just the TV like that, and suddenly the sad images, all these things, and we were like hypnotized in front of the screen, and nobody could say anything, and what happened then? Anyway, so and I left a few hours after walking down to Panama. Then I was thinking myself, what we should do? What we should do? Should we forgive? Should we?
Yeah.
And I was thinking, maybe we don't have to reply because we are all in the same club, is it?
Right.
Finally, then, and then I think it could be a huge opportunity maybe to don't reply.
Right.
But finally, we saw the President of the United States of America saying that we go and we will reply. So I left as well to try to understand the world, to see the other side, because in any things we have two sides or maybe more.
Mm.
Then to see if how they could be, and that's why I went to Middle East really, to try to understand them. And so sometime after a few years because I walked from Montreal down to Brazil, then after it was from Brazil to South America, South Africa, so I started there up to Egypt, and I passed through Sudan and Egypt and some Middle East country. Then sometimes people, they say, we begin to hate America, and before we loved America, and because all these images against us, finally, like them, I was like really like against them. So I said, no, we should love America. So it's not the way to cultivate anger against the other. So finally they said, oh, you're right. Oh, it's not
okay.
It's a very, very not easy subject now you are asking to me.
Well, yes, I'm sure it affected you on a deep level, and as you say, walking in the world and thinking about it. and continuing to walk, and how it affected your commitment. I wanted to ask you, you know, years ago I encountered a walker like yourself. I'm not sure how extensive his walk was, but after our conversation, I said I wished him a happy and safe journey. And he said to me, well, which one? And made me sort of choose whether I was wishing him a happy journey or a safe journey. And at that moment, I sort of examined myself and decided on safe, on safety for him. That was my wish. With all these things going on in the world, of course, the issue of safety must have come up. And did you encounter any change of heart along the way, or felt the need ever to, you know, I'm going to cut this short and head home?
You are talking about safety.
Yeah.
Through this, the world is not so bad.
I know.
We should be careful. It's not so bad. Then even when I met some, we say, bad people.
Yeah.
And I told them that I walk for peace for children. Sometimes they even gave me help.
Mm.
And they gave me food and place to stay. And because I guess all people in the world, they want peace, and we fight for peace, because maybe my peace is not like your peace.
Right.
So I'm not so tolerant. Huh? So, and I was wondering what is good and bad. And finally, I don't know, I may be wrong, I see that I am a human being. I cannot be super good. I cannot be super bad. Super bad. I, in the average of the human being. So I think there is evolution, and try to understand the forces who push and pull us from one side to the other.
Yeah.
And the big thing is try to reach that famous, very hard to get harmony, the word harmony.
Yeah.
And for this, we are all notes, different notes of music, I guess.
Mm.
And take our place in the humanity concert.
Yeah.
And to try to get beautiful music all together, but this is, I think it would be not easy. It's not easy to achieve. Mm. But in the meantime, I want to say the world is not so bad if we understand the other. If we don't understand the other, sure, the world is bad.
Right.
So, and go the other side, and sometime I was in the other, maybe I don't answer well your question.
No, it's very good.
I'm
it's
sorry.
Lovely. I love the metaphor about the different notes.
I'm traveling with you in my mind. So sometime I was with what we say our enemy and the other side, and they say, please tell them we are not so bad people, and tell them that we want peace. And so now I am sort of guys that I have to nearly shut my mouth. I think,
well,
I will not give you an interview anymore.
Yeah.
No, but I
well,
mean,
you know, you returned about the time that the Occupy movement began here, and you know, I'm sure you heard of the 99%.
Mm-hmm.
That we talk about here. I also think the 99% also refers to the people of Earth who do not want war. The 99% are want peace.
Absolutely.
and are really not out to hurt other people. And I think you probably encountered that along your journey, which is a remarkable story. Of encountering your own humanity with others. You mentioned the story earlier of someone in Richmond, Virginia, who helped you with your tires. Is there a story from the road, perhaps from South America, that stands out to you that you could share? Because maybe we'll do a little around the world during this chat.
I I would like to go back in the U.S. They were amazing people for me. The American people, I want to say to all of you, you gave me a huge help. And people, they tried to give me place to stay and on the way, and they found other people. And so it was about 6.5 months to get the border of Mexico. Mm. And then I remember somewhere there were a guy, he came from the driveway, was half paralyzed, and he said to me, what you are doing, it is so beautiful. He said, please enjoy your trip. Mm. So this is what I would keep it in my heart forever. I would try to cultivate it, enjoy. And then finally I went in Mexico, and some Americans said, be careful, Mexico, maybe it might be dangerous. And then so I was a little scared. Finally I crossed the other side, and it was not so worse.
No.
Yeah, because you see, I walk, then you are grounded. You are with the people. People, they walk there. So you are at the same level. Like in South America, sometime, even in Africa after, they said, hey, you are a sort of white people. You have access to all the gadget. Why you are walking?
Yeah.
It's the reverse of the evolution. So I take it as the reverse of the evolution. And I was in Peru one time in the mountain, and they were harvesting the potatoes. They have small, tiny potatoes, and very nice. And so there were a small child behind me and running, and he said, "Señor, señor, señor." So I just turned to see him, and he was coming with opening his hand to me. He said, "It's for you." There were three small potatoes on inside of hot, warm, ready to eat. This is what I think the most beautiful gift that I never had, with a little beautiful smile.
Hmm.
I had some help. Huh? I had airplane flight ticket that I got from South America to Brazil, then from New Zealand to Canada, or all sort of help. But this, I guess, it was my biggest gift, that the sharing and the simple act of sharing and open your hand, and this I will remember forever.
Mm.
Yeah, and then there were as well some place that I crossed, we can say deserts, that in South America, there were the most arid of the world, the Atacama desert in Chile.
Yeah.
And 2 months to pass that desert, I crossed 6 deserts through, I think. But these places, these are the places that I wrote the most. You go very far inside of your imagination, and you are the one, you are just alone. And so it's a huge spiritual trip, that there is nothing for you. There is only sand, beige, and blue, the sky. So no trees and... Yeah, sure, I'm on the road and some cars and vehicles sometimes, but you are alone for days and days and days, and sleep in the desert and go again and bring food, water, and it's this place, you are nearly God. Because there is nothing around you. There is nobody will say you're wrong or you're right. Because you are right. The concept of the good and the bad, you have the control on it. And there is nothing around you. So you are nearly a prophet. You have revelations or prophecies, or I don't know, it might be a fantasy, whatever. But this is your truth. And
yeah.
It's answer questions, existential questions that you had, and through your way. And so it's I understand prophets, they went in deserts, and
it's
you are really in contact with the divinity, we can say.
Now I want to say I perceive this journey that you took on as a deeply spiritual and transforming one, and I would just like to ask then, from where you are now all these years later, Who were you before this decade of walking, and then who are you now?
This is a question, huh?
Mm.
About spirituality. I come from a culture, and we, these French-Canadian people in Quebec province, and in the 70s, 60s, 70s, we had, we called that period the Quiet Revolution. And you remember, maybe you heard about nearly Quebec wanted to be separate or from Canada these times anyway. So, and many people these times as well, they left the Christianity. Most of the French Canadians were Catholic. And I guess the religion was too much even in politics and for the time of my grandfather, father, grandfather. And they control nearly all life of people. So I guess it came like a point of saturation where almost many people, they left. So I grew up, we stopped to go to church. I was about 10 years old, I guess. And my parent and many people around anyway. And then so we grew up quite sort of free, just by our home. And and I embarked in business and tried to make money, and it didn't feel me well. I guess that's why that midlife crisis that I had to search for other things. I was in Chile, in South America, and there is a guy, he said, Jean, you just escape, huh? I said, yes, you're right. You put the finger at the right place. So it was an escape that I made. And further, I saw the values, because we were, I guess, too much in sort of make money and
the you material, should take the market, the material
and blah,
value.
Blah. Yeah. Yeah. And I played a game. It didn't feel me really. And finally, I saw through other people that they were so rich, and we call them poor people. I learned many things from them. They have beautiful values about the sharing love and something we cannot touch, and around their family and friendship and neighborhood. And so I learned that they we see finally I saw much more smile in what we call, I don't like these words, developing countries or third world countries.
Right, it's one world.
Yeah, so yeah. It's, I don't know who is more developed than the other, finally. Yeah. So that about the simplicity of life, the values, and now I'm coming back with my family, my wife. I became grandfather of two since I left, and I met them when I came 16th of October, just 5 weeks behind, or 6 weeks. Then, so now I want to cherish them and be with them and care them and just try to find the joy and with the simplicity of things. And now we are coming in Christmas times, and we will even not play the game of Christmas time. We will cultivate much more on materialistic values, is it? That's what maybe the goal of Christmas time.
Yes, indeed.
The real goal of Christmas, is it? So, yeah, and to share and, yeah, about, yes, only cultivate love and peace. It is love is peace, is it? Anyway, that's what I'm coming and I'm happy to be, I consider myself as a sort of free thinker, but I don't know who I may be, because passing through all these faith and religions that I saw, and tribals and other sort of spirituality that I think I had a little injection of all of them.
Okay.
So.
Well, that's great. Thank you, John. Let's explore that a little more in the second half of our show. Stay on the line. You are listening to the Godspeed Institute live on the Progressive Radio Network. We are going to take a short break. When we return, We will continue our conversation with the walker, Jean Béliveau, who took the last decade to walk the planet for peace. Now let's spend a couple of minutes with Papa Wemba. Stay with us.
Take me by the end, show me the way I can go. Take me by the end, show me the way.
Welcome back to the Godspeed Institute. I'm your host, Care Hollenbeck. That was Papa Wemba and Show Me the Way. We're speaking with the walker, Jean Béliveau, who recently returned home from an 11-year walk around the world for peace. Now, Jean, in this part of the program, I'd like to delve a little deeper into what you were just beginning to share about the sort of inherent spirituality of your work. You were mentioning poverty, you were mentioning joy, and you were mentioning others who may have helped show you the way in your journey. Could you share some about that?
Oh yeah, about children. And it's when I saw sometime I went down in America and I stayed in shelter from or homeless, and I saw ladies, they were beating from men, and they had children, and we have violence in our own system as well, that always we are focused on maybe other countries as well, other countries. Then the children, they blame me slowly to their own cause, and I... When sometime I saw people beating children on the way, I just could not. I just could not see it. I just said to people, "Please stop it." And just that child need just love. And then in Africa, as I told you, I saw like the simplicity of life as. Children, they don't have many things. They play with stones and piece of wood, and they smile from the bottom of their heart and laughing. And so, and sometimes I just arrive in town or like the chief of the tribe or the village, they received me. Mm. In the evening, in the dark, children were singing their own song, cultural song, and I could not understand a word, but it was so warm and lovely, and I saw as well children work they wash shoes. They work hard to have little money to survive as well. And some they were in very pity conditions. And you see children as well who are very privileged to be in very rich or conditions. And what I want to just try to say maybe is to these children to keep their dream. Keep their dream. I think us big people, we lose the child we have in our heart, because that child, when he were young, he had a dream, that human dream, sharing each other like all we are mostly equal. So and they thank me, they teach me a lot about their own cause, and so I think we have to respect the other people, respect their other sort of belief. And so you see in my homepage, you see so many smiles.
There's so many beautiful pictures on your website.
Perfect everywhere.
Yeah.
Now,
you know, you're mentioning again how material values can leave us empty, and reminding us that joy is not found in gadgets necessarily. And as we head towards Christmas, this is a nice time, or any holiday season, to recall that, especially in the West. I recall Mother Teresa was being asked about all the suffering she was encountering in India, and all the unhappiness, and she said actually that she found a lot of joy amongst the poor, and that she felt that the spiritual poverty was over here, that we don't, you know, we might seek happiness here and a lot of happiness through things, but that joy is something else. And that's it sounds as though you were encountering that as you were on your walk. Could you share a story, because you mentioned the Middle East before? Was there anything, any particular encounter along the way in the Middle East that stands out to you?
Yeah. Us, we have NGOs, organizations to help. And there, they nearly don't have. I was thinking when I was, for example, in Turkey or Iran, you say, in English, I guess.
Yeah.
And people, their door was open for me. Come, I have food for you. Mm. You have a place to stay. And sometimes I had to refuse because I had to walk and I had to go. Then, what I want to say, sometimes some of them, they say, we would like to go to Canada, or can you help me to go there? I said, maybe you are right here, it's not so bad. Okay, some countries, they have regime, or even us, what is a regime? Maybe we have a regime as well, sort of, because maybe the democracy is the worst regime. ruling by ourselves anyway. And so I said, no, you are okay. In Canada we have stress, and there they don't have stress. And we have even people, they kill themselves because they have stress, and they suicide. We almost have some people around of us, they have some experience like that. So and they said, people, they kill themselves. I said, yeah, we have some fact. We want to survive, and we want the life, and because we have stress, they didn't catch that the stress of the life and economic hard time we have, that even people, they want to give up their life. So you see, we are talking about India as well, and you see psychiatrists.
Yeah.
Or this field of doctors.
Yeah.
They don't have much there.
No.
Because they don't have that sort of disease that we have plenty here. All
yeah.
sort of mental disease we develop because the stress, and it's so powerful that people we become lost in our life. And there they don't have these sort of things. Sure, they have caste and.
Yeah.
Like we said, no perfection. They have
right.
poor children, but in India, they have their caste, their social rank. I don't know.
Right.
But we say the lowest. Even they find the happiness. They know how they are, and they find the happiness in poor situations. And
yeah.
for them, it's done like that. And I think I said when I be back home, and I will maybe like a spoiled child want something. I said, "Hey man, think to these sort of children. They find their happiness in with nothing."
Well, so, like you said earlier, it's about the values and not being. It's not a material based value life, but one more rooted in family, I think. Now, did you encounter, Jean, any difficulties along the way? You must whether it was a particular country or a particular, you know, political situation, or I realize most people were welcoming. Were you ever in a situation where they weren't?
Oh yeah, sure. It's I don't want to put it as so beautiful. Sure, I
yeah.
had some little assault, like in South Africa, two guys came to take my things. I was pushing them, we were struggling, and finally I said, but that place, it was Transkei in South Africa, where really Mr. Mandela was born. It was in the time of the apartheid, they called that place autonomous region.
Yeah.
That the time of the apartheid, they put the black, the bad black guy there,
right.
and so, and still you feel the repression they had, and so anyway, two guys came to take my things, and so finally the police was patrolling. That I told them the police are patrolling on the way, and so finally they left me go. I passed where there were lions in Africa.
Oh my!
Wow!
Whoa! Okay. Oh, natural danger there.
People,
oh my
told
God.
Me you might see on the way some lions. So,
wow.
But you know the trick is...
Well, what's the trick?
Yeah, you don't take shower for a few weeks before.
Oh, really?
So you don't smell good.
Okay.
So they say Canadian meat is not so good. So.
Oh, my gosh.
No, I'm just kidding. But really... So, people, they just say, you just keep walking and you don't run. If you see lions, first it would be a female will attack.
Okay.
But when you walk through, you wish that they will get a good gazelle before you.
Oh my God! Yes.
Then sure, but I had I was very nervous. My two pepper spray that I have.
Oh my God!
Because people in Africa, they gave me that thing not for human being, but really for wild animal.
Yeah.
And then through and then, but I didn't see myself. Maybe they saw me and they said, "You just, in the desert, Atacama Desert, I think a puma." I was sleeping. I was sleeping in the night and no tent, just my sleeping bag. Then I heard behind me a noise. And I passed through 9 countries. They provide me escort. In the most heavy place was Mindanao in Philippines, southern Philippines, island called Mindanao, and
yeah.
they have separatist group, rebel groups in the mountains. So the police, they provide me escort and even the army. And imagine I was walking. It was I had the protection for 400 kilometers. And 4 to 15 guys was walking with me with all weapons. And I was thinking, man, you walk for peace. And So sometimes I said to these guys, I want to meet the chief of the rebel group. They said, no, you will be kidnapped. So I said, what do you do now with me? You are kidnapping me. We walk and they protected me, but it was very nice for that sort of thing. But as well, you think about our world and how can we fix much more money together anyway.
Well, that's a fascinating journey. And so you did get escorted in a few places. Now, Europe, as you're walking across Europe, of course, and getting a little of the background of not only, you know, Canada, French and British, but also the U.S. and where a lot of things have come from. What were your feelings going across Europe as a source of a lot of why, you know, the world is the way, an early source, historical source, of a lot of the what you were seeing out in the world? What was that like?
It was after 4 years in South America, in Africa, I got I came in Lisbon, Portugal, and there I had a shock, a culture shock, because people in Africa, I was nearly the king. They would receive me to their place easy and come, and but there it's Europe, so it was different. So I came like, wow, this is a hard world.
Oh, really?
And then, like in Africa, you don't eat in front of people. You have to share. If you walk on the street, if you eat, you don't eat for the respect of the other. But there, people was eating on the street, and so I said, wow, this is not correct for the other, because I had developed another culture from Africa anyway. So. And then it was so a big shock, and finally, slowly, because I was always in culture shock, and I tried to assimilate culture and to be used to slowly the cycle. And when I went in France, so I was so happy because first time I had to go to France, but finally, as a French Canadian, I said, bonjour, les Français, come on, how are you? And from Canada. And yeah, the southern part of France was a little harder for me. So, but the north, they were much more. It's different, even in countries, different. Mm. So the French, they are very different of us as a French Canadian. I was much more comfortable in Ireland, even in England, Scotland.
Really?
And because I guess the British history we have here in Canada anyway.
Right.
So same food, same sort of thing. And so after I went in Germany, they were quite nice, yeah. Mm. And it was the autumn, so sometime I had to sleep mostly outside because it's more dark. And and I went to the Eastern Europe. Eastern Europe is different. It is very, very different. And for them, have to see a foreigner, I was always welcome. It's another Europe. Eastern Europe is different. It's poor, but they share their food, and in Serbia, they were beautiful people as well, and so that I could not leave their place sometime. I had to take them, like, I don't know the word in English, to say, I'm sorry, I should go. Yeah, and then, but you see all through the Greco-Roman, where we come from.
Yes.
All our sort of culture, and as well the theme of the World War II as well.
Oh, yeah.
That I saw traces a little bit everywhere in my way, even in South America and Africa. It was so huge, and it was a little bit everywhere in my way. Like I passed as well in Japan, and so and you pass through the history. Huh? You see all these historical factor onto view.
Now, having had this experience in this journey, this tremendous journey that I'm grateful that you took, what is your hope now for the children of the world, and how would you suggest how can we achieve it?
I think by nature, the human being is not so tolerant, I guess, by nature, by basic instinct as well. But we have to always cultivate and find the humanity through us and through the other, because we cannot escape and be rude with the other, because if I am rude with the other, I'm rude with me. Mm-hmm. And I think it's sort of make a step on the way to peace for the children, and be aware on the simple act that we do every day about what we buy, that the product that I buy it's come from somewhere else. Sometimes we don't mind about what we buy, but it is a very important act. Do that my money help other children in the world, then this is very, very important. We talk about fair trade.
Yep.
And I saw, for example, in Ecuador, children working, putting bananas in box for $1 or $2 to give that money to the mother, because the father, he drink a lot of beer, and because he was a child, and we put bananas in the box before in the cycle, the vicious cycle.
Mm.
Yeah, to try to be aware of all these things. Sure, you were talking about these sort of manifestation. We had occupied the places like we have here in Montreal, and I guess there is a new dream in many people. It's not a question of rich or poor people. I think there is a new dream, and we may have inside of us a sort of desire, and I don't know, maybe later it might change. And I think there is a desire for change, and this is natural, and
yeah,
this cycle, and for, and anyway, this is come from the baby inside of the mother, the mama, and to be cherished, and up to the old people as well, anyway.
Mm. Yes, well, I don't know, perhaps you and I and those 99% are also part of the new dream. I'm wondering, it sounds, I hope you wrote down your journey as in a diary along the way. Do you have plans for any books or other projects based on this walk?
Oh, yeah.
Please share.
I just arrived, and we had about 15 editors, publishers. They wanted to really publish the book, so now we are working hard for this publication. Maybe it will appear in somewhere in the next 6 months or so.
And I hope so.
There is quite some demand for public speaking. I have a TED organized for March that I will go in Waterloo, Ontario, for speak, and then many speaking. And as well, I'm working because in Canada and about 30, 35 countries in the world, there are some people, they have a dream to have a Ministry of Peace.
Yeah.
So I think it's something we need in our world, to give a heart in our countries, and to feel and try to feel the children of our countries.
Mm, thank you so much, Jean. Yes, living by the heart. Now, if people want to learn more about your work, where should they go? What is the website address?
Oh, thank you, Claire, to help us to
move
the work.
Yes, definitely.
Right? So there's the famous 3 W's, dot, and then we go another 3 W's, ALK.org. We can say www.walk.org.
www.walk.org. Well, Jean, I just wanted to thank you so much for being on the program. It was a pleasure speaking with you today, and your insights are so valuable, and I'm so grateful for the journey that you took, not just for yourself, but for the rest of us as well. And I wanted to wish you Godspeed and the best of luck with your projects. Please keep us posted.
Thank you.
About all your next steps, as it were.
Thanks. It was a great pleasure to share about that walk, and thank you. And you are great people to spread the message of harmony in the world.
Oh, thank you again so much. Now, before we close today, a lot of what we shared in this program had me considering my own childhood, and I'd like to share a reflection with you. When I think of my maternal grandfather, Pierre Chappé, I recall a thin, small man who was a giant influence in my early years. In some way, he was a typical Frenchman, witty and well-dressed, with a cigarette hanging straight down from his lips, and somehow he managed to smoke and to speak this way. In other ways, he was not so typical. Pepe was a man whose relationships were the stuff of legend. He was a doctor, the only doctor in a small town in Brittany during World War II. And at home, the roles and tensions he endured were enormous. His home was occupied, yet he was a member of the resistance. He provided medical care to the French soldiers who were wounded, but he would also tend to the wounded German soldiers. He would travel through fields of mud and manure in the middle of the night to deliver a baby at a farm, receiving as payment a chicken or a loaf of bread, and for him, in that circumstance, that was payment enough. His relationship with me began much later, when he was old and retired to the seaside in Saint-Malo, which is a great fortified city on the coast of Brittany. And then in the 1960s, I was his towhead American granddaughter visiting from New York to spend the summer with him. I spoke very little French at the time, and he very little English. Yet we sat together in the afternoons and enjoyed a deeply intuitive and mutual love. And one day, when I was 5, he taught me something I would not forget, which was a lesson about artichokes, which grow abundantly in Brittany. After he prepared them and we cooked them and they cooled down, he and I sat down together at the kitchen table with an artichoke between us. And we began by gently pulling off the tougher outer leaves one by one, enjoying the tiny bit of meat they bestowed. And then going deeper into the artichoke, the leaves grew finer, and there was more to eat there. And deeper still, the leaves became thin and so tender that one could consume them almost in entirety. And then finally, there was tiny little leaves shaped in a point like a wizard's hat, and they could be pulled away from the heart of the artichoke in one piece. And there came the challenge. Around the heart was a layer of fine yet prickly hair that needed to be pulled away with between tight fingertips or gently scraped away so as not to damage the heart. And this was painstaking for a little child, but we persevered and revealed the inner treasure, the tender heart. And the moment arrived, I dipped the meat into a perfect vinaigrette and sank my teeth into the heart's nut-like goodness, golden oil running down my chin. And Pepe smiled. He knew all about clearing the way to the heart. I bring this up because when it comes to work and various life issues and even the human psyche, the onion is traditionally cited as a symbol or analogy. That is, there are layers and layers to peel away in order to get to the center, but the nature of the onion remains essentially the same throughout. When it comes to love, I prefer the symbol of the artichoke. There are different stages on the journey to its heart. The artichoke requires persistence and patience. Like love, it holds a gift that calls for special effort. And we may stop short in our relationships if we find that final layer or barrier too difficult or too demanding or distasteful. But if we choose to stop, and so many of us do, we will cheat ourselves of the grandest prize. The way forward for all of us, together, is the way of the heart, the unobstructed heart, free to love, in peace, and full mutuality. Thank you for joining us today on the Godspeed Institute. This program was recorded live on the Progressive Radio Network in New York City Our guest was Jean Béliveau. The show was engineered by Myron Bitz and produced by Michael Hallenbeck. If you'd like to hear this or any of our previous programs again, or send it to someone, simply go to GodspeedInstitute.com and join us again as we continue to explore all the world's religions and spiritual belief systems. Until then, we wish you Godspeed.